evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and tonight's guest is going to be a fun departure from our usual style. Our Paradigm Shifters are people who are making a difference in the collective of our species at this time. And tonight's guest is a very, very creative cook, a chef. He's young. He's bringing forward his wonderful information about vegan eating and being kind to the planet whilst being very amusing, at least for me. He was pretty funny, and he's bringing in all the latest technical accoutrements to communications. So without further ado, we're going to meet Brian Patton, the sexy vegan cook. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Brian.
How are you?
You're an ordinary dude, it says so right here on my book.
Yeah, that's the way I see it.
Now, let's tell everybody what got you going to be a cook, because it didn't seem like that was going to be your natural affinity when you were young, did it?
No, it definitely did not. There wasn't much cooking in my own household. Mm-hmm. There was, my grandmothers and such would cook quite a bit, but my mom, not so much. And so
your grandmothers were Italian, right?
Yeah. All my grandmothers were Italian, my great-grandmothers. So I definitely experienced food a lot, and a lot of, ethnic food and just homemade, like, from scratch. Like, every Sunday we'd have pasta from scratch, meatballs from scratch, homemade bread, homemade sauce.
Was it good? Was it tasty?
And such. What's that?
Was it good?
Oh, it was delicious. I still can, like, remember the smells and the taste. Just the texture of that homemade pasta is really unbeatable. Hmm. And while I was exposed to that food, I never really was learning to cook, since my mom didn't really cook that much. Mm-hmm. So we just had the all the pizza places on speed dial, and we were in an Italian sort of neighborhood, and so there was a pizza place on every corner just about.
Whereabouts were you in New York?
It's Pennsylvania. It's like northeastern Pennsylvania, but it was a place where everybody was either Italian, Irish, or Polish.
Oh.
So those were all the foods that I grew up around. And but again, I was never really learning how to prepare them. And then it wasn't until, after college, actually I didn't even know how to cook spaghetti until I was a senior in college. I was really disconnected from my food.
Mm.
So I was at home sort of unemployed a little bit after college.
What did you study at college? What kind of a degree did you get?
I studied public relations.
Oh, really? Okay.
So communications, public relations, had some advertising classes, but my major was in communications, public relations. So,
Well, you're sure communicating.
I didn't know what that meant, really. I didn't know what I wanted to do with it or if I want, it was, I was directionless after college. I think a lot of people are. So I was sitting there on the couch, on my parents' couch late one night, and there was this public access show. Local, I'm from the town I'm from is very, very small. And so it was just a local TV station, and there was this cooking show, and it was this, like, sort of portly gentleman. His name was Chef Lou, and he made this really easy pasta dish. And I had just learned how to cook spaghetti because I just graduated from college. So I thought, oh, that dish looks pretty easy. Let me try that. So I made it, and my parents sort of liked it, and they were a little less disappointed in me than they usually were than they were previously. And
are you an only child?
No, I have two younger brothers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then from there, I just gradually started to get into cooking and learning recipes. I then moved to Los Angeles, started just getting addicted to all these cooking shows and just learning, just trying to learn, and then eventually I started to do it for a living.
Well, I thought it was really the introduction of this book called The Sexy Vegan Cookbook, Extraordinary Food from an Ordinary Dude. The introduction is hilarious. I had to laugh and laugh. It's really good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's what I was going for. So,
and
my mission was accomplished.
Very often the people I interview are on the spiritual path or a quest of self and so on, and often talk about miracles that happen or synchronistic events that lead them in certain directions. Well, you had a certain amount of synchronicity taking you into the cooking world, didn't you?
I would say that there has been a large amount of synchronicity. Just up to the point where I was just explaining now, then I was living in Los Angeles, once again, unemployed. And so I just thought, well, I enjoy cooking. I think that maybe my food is good enough to serve to human beings now. So let me try to get a job and just see if I like cooking for a living. Maybe that will be something that I could do. So I did that. I basically found this ad online, and they were just looking for a cook just in this little cafe, and we were just sandwiches, salads, breakfast, lunch, that type of stuff. It wasn't even like dinner entrees or anything like that. So I thought I could handle that. I went in and interviewed. I said, look, I have no experience, but I'll work for free. I don't even know if I'm going to like it. I don't know what's going to happen. I just want the experience because I have no other way of getting experience. So the chef hired me. I don't know if she saw something in me or just, wanted some free labor. But
this was
going to
be for free, huh? For no, you're going to get no money for this?
Well, that's what I said in the interview. I said, I have no experience. I don't know. You know, I know how to make this, this, and this. And I just want to try it out. You know, I need to get experience. So how can I get experience? So the chef began to train me on the menu. And then within about a month or so, she had sent me off on my way, and I was there running the restaurant by myself with me, a dishwasher, and a waitress. And it was a small place, but still, it was just one person basically doing all the prep, all the shopping, all the produce ordering. Every aspect of it was this crash course. And I did get paid for every hour I worked.
And did you like it, Brian? Were you enjoying it or what?
I enjoyed it when I was, it was a sort of a love-hate thing because it was very stressful. And it was just very, there was a lot of pressure because, especially around lunchtime, obviously, we were sort of in this office complex, so it would get crazy. I was just one guy. I had one waitress and one guy washing dishes, and that was it. So it was very stressful. I did want to drive my car off to Santa Monica Pier just about every day on my way home, but I decided not to do that.
Uh-huh.
And
this is good.
And yes. And then the synchronicity comes in where a friend of mine who owned this company called Veggin' Out, who is who I'm executive chef for now. It's a vegan home delivery service.
Oh, wow.
And it was him and his brother. They had a very small operation. They wanted to get into a bigger kitchen so that it can expand. So I thought, okay, maybe the kitchen that I'm working in, maybe you guys can rent that when we're not here and do that. So it just sort of luckily worked out that way, that sort of my friend and I sort of became friends, and then this happened, thus allowing his company to expand and allowing me to be opened into this new vegan world that I didn't know anything about. I knew it was out there, but I never explored it as an option. As a way of life, so I started.
So you weren't a vegan by then.
No, I was not a vegan at all, and in fact, I was the exact opposite. I ate steak, chicken, fish, you name it. If it walked, I ate it, or if it came from something that walked, I ate it. So, and as a result, I also had a lot of other problems. I drank excessively. I smoked cigarettes. This was all bad stuff being put into my body. So
you weren't exactly a bone rack. You weren't a skinny little guy, huh?
Oh, no. I was quite the opposite. I was weighing in at about 260 pounds.
Okay.
And I'm not 8 feet tall, so it's not good. if I was 8 feet tall, that would be a decent weight. But I started working for this vegan company, and I thought, well, I feel pretty awful these days. And I was addicted to Taco Bell Crunchwrap Supremes that I would eat at least once a day. I couldn't drive by a Taco Bell without it. And at that point, I was like, all right, I need to make a change. That's it. I can't be doing this.
How old were you then?
So I decided to become vegan for a month.
And how old were you then?
And how old was I? Let's see, probably 27 or 28.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, 27 or 20. So, you know, it's kind of later. So I thought I would just try it for a month, and it would be a nice kickstart to a diet or just to a healthier way of eating, and then I would go back and eat what I normally eat. I didn't know what to expect. So after this month was over, I really felt a lot of energy, and I had started working out. I had lost a few pounds, and so 1 month turned into 2 months, turned into 3 months, and so it went.
Well, I think that our audience would appreciate your talking about your improved elimination.
Oh yes, definitely. That was one of the things that I started to notice. Probably after about the second month, my elimination, evacuation of the intestines, however you like to put it, it definitely improved. I mean, my you know, when you're an obese man, that is. Defecation is one of the least fun things to do.
Really?
To keep it sort of not too gross, but that begins to improve as your diet improves, as you sort of balance your amounts of of fiber, and you just your body tells you that it's changing by what comes out of it.
And you felt bad. Did you feel emotionally better? Did you feel more aware that you could think better or anything like
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Oh. Absolutely. My mind was clearer. I was able to be more creative, which is maybe what led me to start the Sexy Vegan Cooking show that I started doing, just because I had this sort of new outlook on things.
Hmm.
I started to see the world in a different way, and literally, I think it's chemical, like it makes sense because you have better nutrients in your blood, your blood's flowing better, blood goes to the brain. I'm not a scientist or a doctor, obviously, but it just makes sense that your brain would function better if the rest of your body is being fueled properly.
Hmm.
So there was definitely that change going on inside as well as outside. You have to change from the inside first.
But you didn't find it painful or really hard, did you, or did you?
No, not really. It wasn't that difficult. The difficult stuff was just getting used to being in a non-vegan world.
Mm.
I think it's more of the social type stuff. When you go out to eat, learning how to navigate a menu at a non-vegan restaurant and be able to pick out things that you can say, okay, I can veganize that if I ask them to omit that ingredient, or, you know, those types of things were hardest. You had to learn. That was just, you just had to learn by doing, basically. But the actual physical thing, it was just a kind of smooth transition. I just started to gradually feel better. There was no adverse reactions at all or anything like that.
You still didn't want to drive off to Santa Monica Pier?
No, I thought that urge had subsided.
We're
so maybe that had something to do with it too. But I also then left the cafe job and went full time at Veg Now. But speaking again then of just kind of the way, just the synchronicity and the way that this book came about,
mm-hmm.
was pretty odd and not in a very conventional way, and I attributed that to sort of like the law of attraction, that type of thing. Like I wanted to do something that would, even when I was working at the restaurant and I was not cooking vegan, I didn't know anything about vegan. I enjoyed the cooking, but I thought that there was something missing from it. I thought that it was almost sort of frivolous or wasteful, or would become that if I went on to some of the like gourmet eateries. I thought I was giving people food that they wanted, but it wasn't really doing them all that good. It was just sort of a convenience.
Hmm.
And even though it tasted good and it was quality, there was still something missing. And when I started cooking vegan and started learning about the health benefits to the environment, you know, I started learning about animal suffering at factory farms, all that type of thing. I then found the value that I was looking for in, like, I was able to cook and have the value that I wanted to in the cooking. So once that kind of came together and I realized, yes, this is the whole thing that I want. This is the complete picture. I almost had it when I was cooking just regular non-vegan food, but once I locked in that vegan thing, that's when things really started happening in an odd way. I came up with the idea for the doing the cooking videos. Those videos started to get attention, seemingly through no cause of my own. I wasn't out there promoting like crazy. I would just throw them up online, and people would see them and share them.
So they were YouTubes,
eventually,
right?
Eventually, the right people saw them and offered me a book deal.
Wow!
So it was all, I do attribute all of it to when I became vegan. I feel looking back that, you know, I was finally, whatever you want to call it, vibrating on the right level, or, you know, I look at it as like, you ever see these little games? It's like a little board, and there's all these little holes in it, and there's like a silver ball, and you roll it around in your hand.
Oh yeah.
And you try to get the silver balls in the little holes.
Yep.
It has a window on top of it, and you look in, and I feel that like finally all the little silver balls had dropped into the holes.
Oh.
And
so you were happier.
I found my groove.
Yeah, you were happier, weren't you?
I was much.
So you started off this cooking show through YouTubes, right?
Yeah. A friend of mine was telling me about this YouTube channel that I had never heard of. This was like six years ago, maybe. And he explained it to me, and I was like, wait, you could do what? That's crazy. I never even heard that. I could just do whatever I want on a video and put it up on the internet, and everybody could see it. That blew my mind. So I thought, I'll make this like silly cooking show, almost like a spoof on the cooking show that I was sort of watching all the time. And I just wanted to kind of poke fun at it, but also teach something. So I just made a simple guacamole recipe, and it was basically just to entertain my friends. I didn't think it would go any further than that. So I spent a couple months just sort of mulling it over in my head. Usually when I was in the shower is when I would think about this episode that I was going to do, and I was sort of planning it out in my head. And then one day I was like, today's the day. I'm going to make this little video. And and I made it, edited it, and put it up there. And I emailed the link to my friends just because I thought they were the only ones who would see it, because I didn't think anybody would care. And then all of a sudden it got like featured on one of the YouTube like main pages, and I started to get 1,000 views a day just on this first video that I got. Before I knew it, it was at 25,000 views, you know, within the month or within 2 months. And
amazing, huh?
Yeah, it was just kind of like you say, it was synchronicity,
mm-hmm.
I guess, because I had no way to get myself featured. It just sort of happened.
You know what I really love, Brian, is so often, you know, the whole vegan thing is, I think, is really important. I'm not vegan, but I think about it a lot. But what's really interesting is very often it's kind of it's sort of etheric, or people are sort of holy that do it, and there's some sort of, I don't know, separated from the world. What I'm trying to say is, there you are, and your humor is all over the place. I mean, you've got all kinds of innuendos, and you're funny, and I love that that's mingling with the vegan truth, the teachings that you're giving, which are good.
Yes, and I think, like, it wasn't my, like, grand plan, but it sort of started to shape up that way, where as I was making these videos, I was realizing what I was doing without trying to do it, which was making veganism more accessible or more friendly. Because sometimes I don't even like to say we, because everybody's different. I hate, you know, when people put themselves in all these different little groups. Vegans just seem to be sort of standoffish a lot of times, or preachy,
they're the evolved, you know,
they,
ones.
They had like almost like an extreme religious cult type situation.
Exactly.
I think that's how they were viewed. Now they weren't like that, but you kind of come off that way sometimes when when you choose the wrong words or the wrong way to present what you like, I think, or the way you live, you know, to people who don't quite understand it, because you can't just expect somebody to automatically understand it. It took me a while to understand, even after I became vegan, what the whole vegan lifestyle was about. So it is a major change, and you know, the general kind of most people are, you know, don't like change, and they're not, you know, it takes a lot to have somebody make a change, you know, to something that they see as sort of extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're making it accessible for people. I mean, you've even got interesting alcoholic drinks here. You've got great titles. Like, what's this massaged kale thing? That's hilarious.
The massaged kale salad. I learned about this way to prepare kale. Because kale is kind of a tough green, kind of has some bitterness. It's not fun to eat. You don't want to sit there and, you know, just snack on a bunch of kale. But
people are making kale chips these days. You know it.
Yes, I just made a batch of kale chips the other day. Now, those are excellent.
Okay.
those are very good. But just the raw kale, it needs a little help. You can put it in a salad with other lettuces, which is great. Does give it a nice, changes up the texture. But just eating it raw, a whole bunch of it would be kind of tough. So you massage it, basically. What you do, you add a little salt. Mm-hmm. And I do have a recipe video that I made of this, so you can see that on my website.
Okay.
And so you add some lemon juice and some salt. Now, this is not just for flavor. This is not just by accident. Actual things are happening because of the things that you add to the kale. The salt is drawing out the liquids in the kale, which is going to... it's going to take out a lot of the bitterness, or a good portion of the bitterness that is in the kale. And the lemon juice is an acid, so it's going to break down the fibers in the kale, making it not quite as tough. So you're tenderizing the kale, and you're removing the bitterness. So you dust it with salt and lemon juice, and then you like work it around with your hands and massage all the leaves for about 3 or 4 minutes. And you massage the lemon juice and the salt into these leaves. And after 3 or 4 minutes, you'll see that there's all this sort of liquid that's come out of it. It's all along the side of the bowl. So you take your kale, you put it into a clean bowl to make your salad, because you don't want to mix it in with the liquids that you just extracted. And then you can just add whatever you like to it. I like mango, I like almonds or pepitas or, you know, green cabbage for a little extra crunch. You know, you can put anything you want in it, but it's really delicious. And it's incredibly healthy, because you're still getting to eat raw kale. It's just easier to eat, and it's much better to taste.
Did you have to study? Did you study nutrition, or are you just learning it as you go?
I'm just learning it as I go. I definitely do not claim to be any type of nutritionist or nutrition expert, but you know, I just read about vegetables and about what they contain, and kale is, I think, like the healthiest thing that one could possibly consume.
I know. It's really amazing. Yeah. And they used to use it as a garnish, that's all.
I know. Well, that's what you would see it in the butcher's case at your grocery store. It would be lining up between the T-bones and the ground beef just to make it look nice.
I know.
And that's the best thing in the case that you could possibly eat is just a garnish.
Well, tell us, kind of silly. Yeah. Well, it took us a while to grow up, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about meat replacements here, and we got to get back into pizza too and pasta. Talk about those things, because those are the fallback things, the setups that people have for social gatherings and so on. But you got some good recipes for that here.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes. And as I, you know, said earlier, like, pizza was what I lived on in you know, as I was growing up. So pizza was a very large part of my life. So I had to devote a chapter to pizza. And that's another way of being accessible, making fun foods that everybody likes. You know, it doesn't have to be smoked tofu with a, you know, whatever, blah, 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 something. You know, you can make food that people recognize, but it just doesn't have any animal products. So I have a sausage and peppers pizza that is made with like a tofu crumble that is flavored with fennel seeds and all these Italian herbs and spices. You bake it, it gets kind of crumbly, and it gets this nice texture that's sort of sausage-like, and you put that on your pizza with the cheese sauce that you make out of cashews and tofu, silken tofu. Or you could use whatever vegan cheese you find at the store.
But so you don't use any milk products, right?
No milk products, no animal-derived products. You don't need to. I make nachos, which, again, is another thing that's everybody loves nachos, so that's a great thing to present to somebody who is not vegan to show them how much fun and how delicious vegan food can be. I make a cheese sauce out of cashews and spices and silken tofu and diced green chilies. And you season it right, as I do in the book. You heat it up, throw it on some chips. It's delicious, along with all the other things. And that's another thing about vegan food. It's all about kind of the context, where the lasagna. You're talking about pasta. So the lasagna, bolognese, which is a fake bolognese sauce, uses those same sort of sausagey crumbles and puts it with a tomato sauce. And then I make a cashew ricotta, fake cheese, with cashews and artichoke hearts. And the artichoke hearts give it like this light texture that's very reminiscent of ricotta. So you put this all, layer this all together in a lasagna, and separately, you taste the ricotta, you say, okay, I could see where it kind of resembles ricotta, but it's not ricotta. And then you eat the sausage pieces. You're like, it sort of resembles sausage, but, it's not sausage. Then you put it all together. You bake it. It comes out of the oven. It's piping hot. There's steam coming out. You smell it. It smells like lasagna because you have the fennel scenting the air. You have the sauce that you smell. And then it looks like lasagna when you take it out. You cut a piece of it. It's creamy and it's rich. And it looks like lasagna. Then by the time you're tasting it, all of your senses have been sort of fooled into thinking that you're about to eat a meaty, cheesy lasagna. So when you eat it, you're like, damn, that tastes like lasagna that I ate, that my grandmother made or whatever. So,
well, tell me this: do your folks like
the right combination of things?
Do your folks like the food?
They do. And they, when I go home to visit, they're very, very welcoming to whatever I make, because of course they want me to cook when I go home. So I'd say, what would you like? They're like, just make if you're at home, just make whatever you would make for your dinner. So that's what I do. So they're very, and actually the one time that was my proudest moment was that I got a text message from my dad one day, and he, he's a meat eater. He goes hunting and this type of thing, but he loves grilling. He doesn't really cook, but he loves, grilling outside at the grill, summertime, whatever. And so he said, how do you make veggie burgers? I was like, what? okay. So I didn't, act surprised. It made me happy that he wanted to try this. So I sent him my recipe and told him how to make them. And then the next day I get a text message with pictures of all these veggie burgers that he made, and I was very proud. It made me very happy to see that, and he said he enjoyed them. So I think he makes them, every once in a while.
Wow. So what do you use for flour, and how do you make a veggie burger? And one more thing was kale chips. How do you do that?
Okay. I'll
Is that too many questions at once?
The kale chips, I made them yesterday. I've been looking into getting a dehydrator. Mm-hmm. They're pretty darn big, so I'm kind of trying not to get one, but I really want one. But anyway, I thought maybe I can make kale chips in the oven. I just want to test them out. So I've seen these brands in the stores, and they're like cheesy chipotle kale chips, and they have all these like topping, like these it's not just a crispy piece of kale. There's like some sort of other element, like sauce or coating that's on it. So I had made this cashew, the smoky cheddar cashew cheese that I use for the mac and cheese, the elbows and cheese that's in the book.
And that's just cashews?
I'd seen some recipes, and I'd seen that is one way to make these kale chips. So you take a head of kale, you remove it from the stems, you chop it roughly. They should still be pretty large pieces. And then you take, for instance, the smoky cheddar sauce from my book, and you toss that with the kale, and you spread it out on sheet pans. Make sure they're spread apart nicely, all the leaves, And then I baked mine in the oven for maybe 15, 20 minutes at about 350. And they were like the ones that I bought in the store. I couldn't believe that I had recreated them on my first try. They were so easy.
Wow.
And they get crunchy and crispy, and the flavors from the cheese sauce all concentrate, and it's very flavorful. And that's a super simple thing you could do. You don't even need to make that cheese sauce. You could toss them with a little olive oil, salt, pepper, and bake them in the oven for about the same amount of time, and you'll have a nice crispy little snack. But doing it with the cheese sauce is really, really quite delicious.
And in either case, they're pretty good for you.
More.
They're pretty good for
you. Yeah, and absolutely. It's you're getting great fiber, you get protein, you get calcium from dark leafy greens. So it's just a fun way to eat to get some nice nutrients in your body. So that was the only part of the question that I remembered. So what was there?
I think I was asking about flour because the flour products are always difficult to play with when you're trying to improve your diet. You know. So what do you use for flour? How can people take advantage
of that?
I
use different flours for different things.
Okay.
I try to do things without flour as much as I can. For instance, like the My Balls recipe, which is a vegan meatball. So I don't use any wheat, gluten, or flour to bind it together. I use ground up walnuts.
Nice title.
yes, thank you. Yes, that title's worked out. Exactly as I had envisioned it when I named it My Balls, because I get people on my Facebook page and on my Twitter, hey, sexy vegan, I had your balls last night. They were delicious. You know, it's happened so many times that I've gotten that email. It makes me so happy.
Well, it's fun.
That was one thing that was my master plan. I'm going to get everybody to tell me that my balls taste great. And lo and behold, it's happening. So like that recipe, I don't use any flour or any bread, breadcrumbs or anything like that. Also, in my black bean burger, my veggie burgers, I don't use, the black bean burger, instead of flour or breadcrumbs to kind of hold it together or to be that sort of filler, I use ground-up tortilla chips.
Oh, wow.
So it's sort of like a Mexican sort of flavored burger anyway. It's black beans and rice and cumin and chipotle and to help bind it together, I grind up tortilla chips. So now you also get this flavor of tortilla chips while you're eating this burger. It's really nice. So,
do you do store-bought tortilla chips, or do you make your own?
I usually have store-bought ones. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I make my own. I have my own, I'll get corn tortillas and bake up my own chips. Depends on what kind of mood I'm in. But as far as flours go, I don't know, for making pizza dough, I don't know. I just use white unbleached flour because that's what I love. Mm-hmm. You can add, I say in the book, you can add some whole wheat flour to make it a little healthier, but that was just fun for me. That wasn't trying to be healthy. I was like, I like white flour, pizza. So, but in other things, I'll use garbanzo bean flour, rice flour. It kind of depends on what I'm making, I guess.
So garbanzo bean flour, what's that like? I've never even heard of that. Is that something you create?
Yeah, it's basically ground up garbanzo beans, it's used. I use a little bit when I make falafel, because sometimes some falafel recipes will have wheat flour in them. But if you want to make it gluten free, you can use garbanzo bean flour, and it acts the same way.
Hmm.
It just doesn't have gluten, so you. So making a bread or something chewy out of it would be difficult because it doesn't have the gluten in it. But it can be used to coat things, to make batters, for like deep frying something. You can make a batter out of it, or you can dredge a piece of tofu in the flour and fry it in the pan, get a nice coating.
Hmm.
So, those are the two sort of alternative flours that I use, are garbanzo bean flour and rice flour.
Hmm.
And otherwise I'll use unbleached white flour or a whole wheat flour.
And does rice flour have a different cooking? You know, some of them congeal a certain way and so on.
No, the rice flour works pretty well. I wouldn't say it's that much different. As in certain things, it's fine. As far as coating something with it and frying it, it operates pretty much the same way.
So have you had anybody complain? Do you have a heavy-duty meat eater that's really loved it or really hated it? Do you have any people stories for us?
Of something that I've made?
Yeah, where you serve something and people are either...
Oh, yeah, definitely. Actually, just a few weeks ago, it was my friend was having a birthday party, and she wanted me to do all the cooking. I said, well, you know, it's all going to be vegan, obviously. She's like, yes, but I guess she wanted her one pseudo-celebrity friend who has a cookbook to cook for them. So anyway, and I was the only vegan there. So nobody else was there.
Now that's interesting, especially a party. Oh, boy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it was a dinner party. It was about 10, 12 people. And I made the lasagna that I was talking about earlier.
Okay.
And I also made the Caesar salad that's in my book, and I made some bruschetta to start with. And I'll tell you, I wish I had video of this, but the carnivores were scraping the casserole of the, like, all the lasagna was gone, and they were in there with their forks. Like, after we had eaten all this food, everybody was stuffed to the gills, and they were still going, and they wanted more of that lasagna. And I was like, secretly in my head, I was like nodding to myself. I was like, yeah, you got him.
Oh, good. Isn't that exciting?
It is. It is. That was one of the really good feelings that I had had about something that I had served was, you know, it was an item that people expect there to be meat and cheese in, and there wasn't any, but they still were scraping the pan.
And they were satisfied.
And they were satisfied, yeah.
Have you ever had anybody who goes, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. I need roast beef or something.
Well, no, I've definitely made some things that were terrible that I didn't serve to people because it was awful. you know, you have experiments, and sometimes they work, and sometimes they don't. I made this soup one time. I had this, like, leftover seitan that I had made, and it wasn't a really good batch. It was sort of spongy. Seitan is made out of wheat gluten. It's a meat replacement sort of thing, and it's all protein. And it starts off as this bread dough almost. Mm-hmm. And if you can season it and flavor it, and then you bake it or steam it or boil it, and it gets this meaty, chewy texture. So you can, I use that in my book. I make like a like chicken fried seitan cutlets. So it's like breaded and fried. So it's sort of like, you know, like a fried chicken cutlet with this, like a KFC type breading on it. Mm. You could use it in many different things. You could use it, like chopped up in a salad, like a chicken salad, something like that. So it's sort of chicken meaty, like, and you could use it to make a lot of things, and I have a recipe for that in my book.
Great.
So the seitan...
See, I'm going to run off and do a bunch of these recipes when we're done.
Yeah, absolutely. So I forget why I was talking about this.
Tempeh? I forget, too. Oh, because I asked you who... we were talking about things that hadn't worked out very well.
Oh, yeah, right. So I had the seitan left over, and I wanted to do something with it. And I had gotten this like head of Savoy cabbage. And I was reading that, like, that's good to cook into soups and stews and stuff. So I was like, oh, I'll make, like, a cabbage and beef soup. That sounds like good, hearty, delicious soup. It was the worst thing I'd ever tasted. I cooked the cabbage too long. The pieces of seitan became sponges. And they were, so it was just, and it was all the whole soup was gray. So you didn't even, like, you didn't even want to eat it. And then when you taste it, it even tasted gray. I don't even know what gray tastes like, but it tasted like I imagine the color gray tastes. And it was just disgusting, and it smelled terrible. And I didn't even let my fiance taste it. She wanted to taste it. She wanted to see how bad it was. But no, I said, no. This goes nowhere. Nobody hears about this. Of course, now I'm talking about it now, but...
well, so what's tempeh?
I never had a bad reaction to the food. Maybe they were just being nice, but I think my food is pretty good, you know, when I serve it to other people, or else I wouldn't serve it.
Well, when I look through your cookbook, and I haven't taken the time, I haven't had much time lately to cook from a book, mm-hmm. but your ingredients are really... wonderful. I don't see anything that I wouldn't want to eat, you know. But the tempeh, what exactly is that? Is that a tofu-related thing?
Yeah, it's made of soybeans, mm-hmm. And it's basically just a cake that's like a solid sort of cake that's made out of fermented soybeans. So it's actually the sort of cleanest version of soy that you can get because it's there's very little processing that goes on. Because even tofu, there's a level of processing. So if you're trying to stay as far away from processed foods as you want as you can, tempeh is a great protein source. It does need some love, because if you just to eat it right out of the package, it would have like this bitter taste, and the texture is not that great. It's sort of dense. So I always start off by steaming it.
Oh, okay.
It just use a steamer basket on your stove for about a half hour or so, and that softens it up. It takes the bitterness out, and it leaves it very open to marinate. So then I love marinating it.
Mm.
And then you can grill it, fry it, bake it. You can do anything you want with it. Chop it up, put it in a stir fry. It's really versatile, and it's really extremely healthy.
Hmm.
So I use that. I have bourbon tempeh sliders in the book, and I have a couple other tempeh recipes too.
Sliders, but, that's funny. So I guess they're gooey, are they?
What's that?
Sliders. I guess they're gooey, are they?
Yeah. Well, yes. And sliders are like little mini burgers.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look at the front of my book, that's what I have. That's what I'm holding on the front cover of the book.
Oh, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Are these little mini burgers? And they the sauce is it's like it's more like a glaze.
Mm.
It's like this bourbon glaze with caramelized onions, and it's kind of sweet and savory at the same time. And they're there's these little bite-sized burgers basically,
mm.
They're quite good. So tempeh, I do love using tempeh. I love using seitan, and I made sure to in the book use whole ingredients for the most part. I didn't want to use many store-bought processed items. Like instead of going and buying a vegan sour cream, I show you how to make your own vegan sour cream, which is very easy.
Ah.
Instead of saying go and get this vegan shredded cheese or vegan cheese or whatever, I tell you this is how you make a vegan cheese sauce.
Tell us how you make sour cream. I think that's interesting because things like cheese and sour cream usually pump up the various things we serve, right?
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, that's in my condiments and sauces chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy, actually. If you go to the store, there's two different types of tofu when you go to the store. You have the one that's in the plastic container that's packed in water. It's usually firm, extra firm, medium firm.
Right.
And that's the one that you like fry and bake and put in stir fries or whatever. Then there's the tofu that is called silken tofu.
Right.
And that is
that.
In a cardboard package, and it's not in the refrigerated section. It's aseptically packed, so it doesn't have to be refrigerated. It's usually in the Asian area where you would get your nori seaweed and your Japanese noodles and stuff. And so you use this silken tofu, and that is it's too soft for you to stir fry or anything like that. So it's great for blending, and you make dressings and sauces and all this type of thing out of it.
Hmm.
So you get the firmest version of that you can get because it just has the less water. It won't be as runny. And you add some lemon juice because it's sour cream. So you have the tofu is the creamy part, and so you have to make it sour. So you squeeze some lemon juice or some rice vinegar. In the book, I use lemon juice. Use lemon juice, sweeten it a little bit with a little agave or some sort of liquid sweetener that you have, and salt, pepper, and that's about it. That's pretty much it. So it's really easy. You just blend it all together, and you just keep that in your fridge and you use that as sour cream.
Oh, wow. It has kind of a culture to it then, hey?
I don't know that it develops any culture type thing. Maybe it does.
Okay. So, I won't count on it for that then, will I? what do you use for sugars? You said agave. Is that good for you?
I use agave nectar.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to sweeten stuff too much, but in a dressing, in a salad dressing, if there's a little too much, if it's a little too vinegary, a little bit of agave just sort of balances that out.
Hmm.
I like the fact that it's a liquid sweetener, so it's already dissolves. It's not like sugar that you have to whisk forever, so it dissolves in your liquid. It's just already liquid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I like that.
So
that type of thing.
So tell us a bit more about your online show, your YouTube. This is a great book, everybody. I really am going to get excited about cooking with it. But I'm thinking of going into the YouTube instructions as well. Tell us about that. Is it still going strong, and are you doing it every week or what?
Yeah, Yes, definitely. I do an episode whenever I get the chance. I should do them more often, but they're rather time consuming to create, and I don't want to just put them out all the time, just making any old thing. I want to make sure that each one is sort of special, like I'm doing something innovative or creative with them, because people like that. People are entertained by that. And even if it's not funny or entertaining, at least they're learning something.
Mm-hmm.
But like, for instance, I wanted to make onion rings for a long time.
That'd be great.
Yeah, so I wanted to make onion rings as an episode for the website, thesexyvegan.com, which is where you can see all my videos. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make these onion rings, but I didn't know, you know, I didn't want to make just any old onion ring. So I didn't make the episode right away. I let it kind of simmer in my head, and I went and did other things. And then I was in the grocery store at my local Trader Joe's, and I saw that they had these onion ring snacks, like sort of Funyuns, you know, like crunchy onion ring snacks.
Yes.
Like in the potato chip section.
Oh, okay.
So I thought, man, and they happen to be vegan, and they're also gluten-free, too. So they're these oniony flavored rings that are like kind of puffy, like corn-based, you know, crunchy items. So I thought, wow, I can make onion rings and encrust the, and like bread, coat the onion rings with ground up onion rings, with these ground up onion ring snacks, because they have a great oniony flavor and they're salty and they're crunchy. So that's when I then made the episode. So I made like your basic onion ring with a wet batter and then a dry batter. And then instead of breading it with flour or breadcrumbs, I used the ground up onion ring. So it had this extra oniony flavor, and it was sort of this innovative, you know, just creative onion ring crusted onion rings. So I try to wait until I have like a more fun idea than just onion rings.
That's great.
If you get what I'm saying.
So here in the book where you have the QR coding, is that what it's called?
Yeah, the QR codes. Yeah.
So if people are reading this and you come to a recipe that you've got a YouTube, is that what happens when you go into that?
Yes, basically what I wanted to do is I wanted there to somehow be some sort of video element to the book, because I came to be because of these videos. Like, I wouldn't have a book if I didn't do videos, so I felt there should be a video element to it.
Right.
And then I started reading about and seeing these QR codes, which are these little square boxes that look sort of like a barcode. They're black and white. And the way they work is, if you have a smartphone that has a camera on it, or an iPad or one of those tablet-type devices, you can get this free app. It's called the QR Code Reader. And you just take... Basically, you activate your QR code reader on your phone or your iPad, and you hover it over the QR code, and it scans it like a barcode, and then that links you to a video. So, for instance, in the pretend Italian sausage recipe, there's a certain way that you want to, because you have to steam them. So there's a certain way that you want to roll them up in tinfoil to make them shaped as a sausage link. So it's fine to explain it in words, but it's better to be able to actually show someone how to do it, so it makes sense. So different things throughout the book where there was an item that I thought, oh, man, it would be really great if they could see what I'm doing, I just made a little video and put a QR code on the page, and that's an extra, you know, an extra way to – it's just sort of a multimedia book situation where I don't think that has really happened before, not in cookbooks anyway. I've never seen a cookbook that has these such codes, but I bet you will now.
Yeah, no, I have never seen it before either, but it's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, it was just, it was sort of this serendipitous thing where these things started to be very ubiquitous. You know, you see them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the idea like a year and a half ago to have a video element, but I didn't know how to do it. And then as the book started to be in production and these QR codes started to be everywhere, it all kind of clicked together. I was like, this is how you put videos in a book. You put the QR codes and they just scan them, and that's it.
You know what I love is I have a 7-year-old grandson, and there's nothing he opens that he doesn't press. So it's like,
okay, right.
And it's part, I mean, we would have fantasized, and I'm 100 years old now, but we would have fantasized about doing things like that. And this to me, I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. I mean, this is, you're bringing it into today.
Yeah, totally. And what's awesome also is if you get like the ebook version on your iPad or iPhone, or, you know, any smart device like that, instead of there being QR codes, there's just links that you can click on. So you just tap the link and it opens the video right up. So the mobile version or the e-version is really, really cool.
Oh,
like,
that's
great. Like, I'm totally blown away by it because it's on this, you know, it's on your iPad. It's got all these interactive links and it's the video just pops up. And when you're done with the video, you close it and you're still on the same page that you were on. It's really quite, it's quite remarkable.
So when you were studying communication, go ahead.
Whenever I'm messing with my iPad or doing whatever, I look at it and I say, you realize we're in Star Trek right now, right? Like, we are, like, they had these in Star Trek and now we have them.
Did they have them in Star Trek?
In the Next Generation, they had a very similar thing to an iPad.
Oh.
Where they touched it as a touch screen and they would read things on it and it was thin like that, you know. It was, yeah, very, very, very similar.
So when you were at university studying communications, did you have any concept of this actually coming together this way? I mean, the book with the videos it and so on?
Not at all, no. I had no... All I thought about in college was drinking and passing out and eating pizza.
Well, you know what?
I went to class sometime.
I haven't seen, obviously, or you wouldn't have got your degree, right?
Yeah.
But as I was flipping through some of the videos and stuff, I think you've become more and more handsome.
Oh, thank you. I'll attribute that to my vegan diet.
I think so, too.
And partially to my genetics.
Yeah, no, it's really important. I mean, sort of what you eat. You've just done a great job of making it fun, lively, full of beans, you know, maybe even actually full of beans, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's like, you know, I think it's interesting that like, if you watch all of my videos, because it's been over the last 4 or 5 years, so you can kind of see my body transform, and you see sort of me transform. So a friend of mine who has become a friend was sort of, would watch me on Facebook and would comment sometimes, and she would say it was so nice to watch me, like, from my earlier videos, like, I was clearly in, like, a bachelor pad. It was messy. Like, it was crappy. It was dirty. And then as I've progressed and sort of gotten older and got a girlfriend who's now a fiance, I have much nicer surroundings in my videos. She thought that it was very, endearing, I guess, to watch me progress over the years.
I think that's actually very, very...
From a floppy bachelor to a, whatever it is I am now.
But, Brian, it's a real ad for your work, isn't it?
It's what?
It's a real advertisement for your work.
Exactly. That's where I was going when I started that sentence. Yes, and it's a great way to show how somebody transforms by adopting the, you know, such a diet that I have adopted.
Or actually being true to yourself and your own creativity. You could put it that way as well.
Absolutely. That is a huge part of it.
So what's next?
Yeah, go ahead.
What's next for you?
I'm hoping that this book is successful enough to warrant another book. Mm-hmm. It's gotten really amazing reviews from really amazing places so far. You know, it's been reviewed in treehugger.com, which is a huge website, Vision Magazine, which is a magazine out here on the West Coast, Whole Life Times, Veg News Magazine. If you get this current issue of Veg News Magazine, my book was the editor's pick of all the cookbooks that are out now. So it's been getting excellent reviews all over the place. It's gotten me, I wrote an article for the New York Times .com recently. So really just hoping to have another book out. You know, I don't expect this book to change my life all that much as far as, you know, a success, or just as far as, you know, being super popular. I think it's a good, solid book, and I think people will love it. And next time around, you know, my publisher will hopefully have a bigger budget to do more advertising to get the word out there, because everybody who gets the book loves it. So it's just about, I'm just a first-time author, they're just losing a huge budget for crazy advertising and all this stuff.
Yeah, so, but you know something, I know it's going to get quite a bit of readership, and people really need to know this is manageable. It's fun, it's lively, it's easy enough to be very sumptuous, and I think, boy, oh boy, you were smart for a boy.
Oh, yeah, I know. You know, we get a bad rap, us boys, sometimes.
Hopefully, sometimes, as it makes us laugh. But I have to say goodbye now, and I'm recommending that everybody go on to sexyvegan.com. Well, tell them
TheSexyVegan.com.
TheSexyVegan.com.
Yeah.
And the YouTubes are still up, are they not?
Yes, yes. My videos basically are hosted on the YouTube channel, and they're also linked in the Facebook or in the website. You can also find me on Facebook. Just search for The Sexy Vegan, or on Twitter as well, The Sexy Vegan. I use those media a lot to talk about whatever's going on. I take a lot of pictures of food that I make, recipes that I test. I do a lot of food pictures. I know people love to look at, as they call it, food porn. so people do enjoy that. And also, I've got coming up two events that I'll be at. It's the Los Angeles Vegan Beer Festival, and that is this Saturday.
Oh,
I'm going to be a guest chef on one of the food trucks, the Seabirds food truck.
Wow.
And the event is awesome. It is there's 50 different breweries. You pay an entrance fee, you get a little tasting glass, and you just you drink beer all day. That's included in your entrance fee. So
wow.
You get to drink beer all day, and then there's all these food trucks that are serving only vegan food. And there's live music, there's all these different performances, and it's just this huge hub of vegan activity. And
wow.
You don't even have to be vegan. So I'll be a guest chef serving up some of the dishes from the book on there. And then there's an event called World Fest out here in Tarzana, California, and I'll be doing a cooking demo where I think I'm going to do the massaged kale salad that we were talking about before.
Yay.
And just a couple other recipes, and that's at 12 o'clock noon at World Fest, and that's on the 20th of May.
Well, have a blast. Yeah. If we weren't so far up the West Coast from you, we'd be there for sure.
Ah, that's too bad. Well, hopefully I'll make it up there one of these days.
Please
Are you in you are in California?
No, I'm in Washington State in Bellingham, just below the Canadian border.
So, oh, wow, that is way up there. Wow,
yeah, so if you're ever on a book tour, you please call me.
I will, absolutely. I have your number now.
Yeah, that'd be great. So I thank you so much, Brian, and I thank all you listeners for listening to this very inspiring man who really has brought together all the latest concepts of ecological stuff, humor, personal growth, and great recipes in the book The Sexy Vegan. So thanks everybody for listening, and this is Veronica Entwistle saying good night. And if you have any feedback for me, or if you want a session with me, it's a little change of subject, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. Good night, everyone.